If you've been feeling a little bored, numb, unfulfilled, or even stuck in your midlife these days, you're not going to want to miss this episode. Tune in to learn why midlife can have you asking, who am I? How culture is keeping you stuck with your inner patriarchy, and the first steps to start finding yourself and what you want and start to get it. Let's dive in. What's up, sister? Welcome back to the Period Whisperer podcast, the show helping perimenopause and menopause women de-stress your body and decode what it's saying to you so you can own your own health, energy, and weight loss again. If you're new, I'm so happy you're here. I'm Bria, I'm your host, a recovering people pleaser and hustle addict turned functional and holistic hormone specialist. Let's lean in and learn what your body is saying to you. Hey there, sister. I'm super excited to bring you this episode, an interview with Dr. Manuela Powell. She is a breast cancer surgeon turned life coach for midlife and is really all about teaching women how to embody their most real, true selves, to live their most outrageously genuine lives. And this interview is so powerful. More and more as I connect with you and connect with my friends in midlife, I hear this constant feeling of unrest, of unfulfillment, of kind of quietly wondering, is this all there is? If you've checked all the boxes and you're feeling unsatisfied still, I think you're gonna absolutely love this episode. Dr. Manuela Powell is a life coach for midlife women who are ready to start living the sparkliest, most outrageously real years of their lives. After finally getting the memo that she was queer at the tender age of 47, she realized most women could use some help to come out of whichever BS closet they've been stuck in forever. So she took upon herself to be their soul fluffer. For almost 20 years, Manuela was a breast cancer surgeon, but after having her second child, she decided she wanted to free herself from endless work hours, toxic environments, and unflattering scrubs. She put away her scalpel to instead dissect women's minds and help them excise the shoulds, musts, and not good enoughs from their brains forever, so they can stop people pleasing and learn to fully trust themselves to the horror of the patriarchy police. She's a native of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and after living in New York City, Washington, D.C., and Hawaii, she currently calls Austin, Texas her home. As a single mama to her two sons, she dances every day, curses like a sailor, so be warned in this episode, and doesn't give a single crap to people who think she should behave her age. You're gonna love this episode. You're gonna love Dr. Manuela. Let's dive in and uncover it all. Welcome, Manuela, to the Period Whisperer podcast. I'm so happy you're here.
I'm so excited to be here. So lovely to talk to you.
It is. You know, I've been excited about having you on the show for a while now. And like the reality of women struggling to know who they are, what they want, like how to become someone who gets it, I think is, you know, for me, it's like hormonally supported by perimenopause. It really is. As our hormones shift, you know, we're becoming more aware of how we may have been living out of integrity in our lives. And we start to wake up to change. But you know, what I love so much about following you, and I'm going to just throw this out there, and everyone's got to go and follow Manuela Powell on Instagram. I'll put the link in the comments below, because she really, truly embodies this. And you're so strong and bold about sharing how to do this for other women. So I'm really pumped to have this conversation. So thank you.
Great. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Why don't we start here? Why don't we just start with why don't you tell us your story? Cause it's a good one. about where you were, how you got to being, you know, a woman who coaches women in midlife who are ready to start living, what did you say, your sparkliest and most outrageously real years of their lives. How did you get here?
Yeah. And it's sometimes like, okay, I was born in, you know, because it's the whole thing, right? Everything I think combined. But I think legitimately it started when I decided to move to Hawaii for a while and to do a sabbatical. And being there so far away from society, from my family, from everything, then, we didn't have cell phones, Wi-Fi was really bad and all that. So it was so much easier to, okay, what do I want with my life? And that was the year I was 40. So it was kind of like an age that was, okay, kind of, let's see what's up. Yeah. So I worked as a breast cancer surgeon for until then and a little bit after too. But when I went there, it was because I had decided to, I wanted to be a mom. And so I was like, well, since I'm 40 and I was working like a crazy person, so I didn't really have time to date or to do anything. So I decided to get artificially inseminated to become a single mother by choice, because why not? But then I met someone, it was a whole thing, and we were in a long distance relationship for a minute. I lived in New York, he lived in Alaska, so it was really long. But Alaska is amazing and everybody should go there. But when I was in Alaska, I'm like, okay, this is not going to work. I'm going to go back to the single motherhood mindset. But let me take a minute, because now, you know, when we're someone, I'm like, now you have... You thought about how it would be to have with another person and all that. So I thought, well, let me take a sabbatical real quick before I move back to Brazil and reopen my practice there to go back to that. And I found this place in Hawaii and I went there and, you know, long story short, met my now ex-husband, but the father of my kids, and we did have kids together. Mm-hmm. And so I think living there at that time was the beginning of, okay, who am I? And it was the first time in my life that I uncoupled the identity of surgeon with my identity. I did not think I was not going to be a surgeon at some point in my life, but I thought, oh, before that, I thought if you take surgeon away, like there's nothing left. Like I'm nothing without it, because it was so ingrained. Yeah. And then I realized, no, actually, I could do other thing, or I'm more than this. This is a thing that I do. It's not who I am. So it was the first time that I started noticing this thing about identity. I'm like, wait, who am I? Because we always talk about this, but then like, we stop to think? I didn't. I don't know if everyone else does, but I was so busy working that I really, you just like, oh, you do medical school and then now you go residency and now do this. And it's just like a go, go, go. And you don't even think so much.
Yeah.
So when I left and then I had kids pretty late. I was 42 with my first and 44 my second. So we moved to Brazil for a while. When I decided to move back to the US, I was like, I want to see my kids grow up. I want to actually raise them. I don't want to be working all day.
Yeah.
So, and the people that I worked in New York for a while, and those people didn't see their kids ever. And I was like, no, that's not going to be me. So I'm going to go and do something else. And obviously this is a very short, because it was like, how do I, you know, where and how I'm going to leave this and all the drama that ensued, which would have been less if I did know that coaching exists at that time, which I did not. Yeah. But then eventually we moved to the US with a 2-year-old and a 2-month-old. So that alone was just like, I don't know what's happening. And then he eventually said, I was like, why don't you find a coach? I was like, I don't play sports. Why would I find a coach? I really did not know that life coaching was a thing. Wow. And it was like, no, a career coach, a life coach. And I was like, sounds like a scam, but let me look it up.
Let me Google it
just to know what that is. And when I Googled it, I remember feeling like this whole body, like this full body chills, because I was like, oh, I need to do that. Oh, this is great. That is a thing. This is a thing that you can do. I can do that. I love that. Because one of the things that I really loved about being especially a breast cancer surgeon is people are so young. I saw women that were in their 40s that it really a surprise pregnancy was more likely than a surprise cancer. Right. And they were so healthy and they were like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
And I remember that one of my favorite things was to have those conversations with them and help them with that part. Because once you get a cancer diagnosis, the person that you were is dead. Like that's now you're a different person. And I think anyone who ever had that sort of experience will know that it's like, yeah, it's a moment and that you're like that, I don't know, the movie that goes in your life and was like, whoa, I need to do things differently.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of women realize that they have been living a life exactly like that. Like, oh, I don't know who I am. I never stopped to think about it. I'm just doing the things. And I think I need to check these boxes, the relationship, the career, the kids, the whatever. And I check the boxes and then I'm still not happy. So obviously then the inner patriarchy, what I call the white dude that lives in your head, who is a total asshole. And I'm not saying that all white dudes are assholes. Absolutely not. But this one is for sure the one that lives in your head.
Internal patriarchy.
Yeah. When you say, well, I checked all the boxes and I'm still not happy, he goes, well, there's something wrong with you, obviously. Right. And I think that resentment or being unfulfilled and all that stuff really contributes to the body. What I say, you know, your body is nudging you, should listen to it before it decides to bitch slap you, because it will.
It will.
You know, look
absolutely
at it.
Absolutely, it will.
Yeah. And I think that phase of life, you know, 40s, 50s, perimenopause, all that is, you know, most people, not me, because I had kids late, but most people, kids are leaving home and then they're like, wait, now do I even like this person that I married with?
Yeah.
Because we only talk about kids. We're only doing that. You know, it's just, there's a lot of automation in your life, or
a lot of automation,
right? Like just unconscious things that you keep doing. And then one day you might, when you have a diagnosis, you will absolutely stop and be like, whoa, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I always, even as a coach, even without knowing that life coaching existed, I remember thinking so many times, like, why do people need to see their own mortality? Which is the one thing we know for sure is going to happen. And like, oh, I'm shocked. I might die. Wait, we will. So let's make the best of it. I think that time of life is such a part, you know, a time of our lives that, well, everything is changing anyway. Yeah. So,
yeah, it's a really good point, you know, because I often think, for those of us who haven't at this stage in our life had that, you know, faced with our mortality that way, it's often like we're the frog in the water being slowly.
Yes.
And so it's like, because we're on automation, we really don't wake up enough. And this is why I always say, like, perimenopause happens for us and not to us. Like the added workload of this hormonal shift really pisses our body, like really wakes us up a little, where we're like, I am so uncomfortable right now. I have to change. And I think the external patriarchy has told us, oh, you're just drying up and getting older and it is what it is.
Yeah.
And that internal, as you say, that internal patriarchy is a tricky one, because it's like, well, it's you're doing something wrong. It's your fault. You know, whereas the truth is, I think it's like the universe, like shaking us by the shoulders, being like, wake the heck up and listen to what your body is saying to you. Listen to those whispers before you get the bitch slap, as you said.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think it's, yes, we live in a society that tells us all that crap that, you know, now, you know, you're, I don't know, 30, 40, 50, however age, whatever age society tells it that you're done.
Yeah.
And even if we are very, it's so easy to get into believe those things.
Yeah.
And even a little, you know, like, especially with social media, with all the filters, with everything being quote unquote perfect and all that, it's so easy. But I think our soul, inner self, higher self, whatever we want to call it, the thing inside us, it knows it's bullshit.
Yeah.
It knows, like, no, that's bullshit. You don't have to do any of that. All that stuff that you thought you needed to do, that you need to pretend, or that you need to, I don't know, the people pleasing stuff and the pretending boxes. Wearing those masks, or even being like, oh, you have, I know I heard that a lot. Oh, you absolutely have to have kids. I heard this my whole life. Mm. And then I had kids. I'm like, I don't know if everybody should be having kids.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should have had kids, but, like, you know, now I'm over that question.
Yeah.
But honestly,
I think
if I hadn't had kids before, not right now, but if I hadn't had kids, I think I would feel like an incomplete person, because it's so ingrained in you that if you don't, there's something that is going to be missing. And I truly don't believe that.
I love what you said there. It's like, I think I would feel like an incomplete, but you're not an incomplete person.
Of course not. Of course not.
Because of what's been told to you, taught to you, and pushed on you, and like normalized for you.
Yeah.
And this,
which is you have to be, that Barbie monologue, right? That I feel like I never have to say it before. It was like, this is what society tells us. I'm like, well, just go Google the Barbie monologue and you know everything that society tells us to do. And we believe it a lot of the time, even if we're super badass and intimidating and all that stuff. I'm like, yeah, I know that when I had kids, I remember that I was like, oh, you know, I'm 42. I'm a grown ass adult. Nothing is going to change. So cute. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling, I didn't put earrings on for like a year, I think, because I was so, oh my gosh, I have to serve this. I have to do everything for this person and all that. And I lived in Brazil. I had a nanny. Like, I didn't have to do all the things.
Yeah.
And still there was part of me that, well, now, you know, this is what I do. This is what I, and then everybody else who was there, well, why don't I just do everything for you guys too? Cause you're here. So,
yeah.
it's so interesting how you can fall into that. And that is the internal patriarchy. That's not, because nobody was telling me. My husband was like, no, I'll help, or, you know, do this or whatever. He was trying to not, to help me not feel that way. But it's just so conditioned and so internalized that you really have to.
I totally, as you're saying that, it's like, I can even see it in myself, like, especially, mm-hmm. you know, in when my kids were young, was just this, like, I have to do all of this all by myself. You know, it was like, if yeah. I'm not, you know, like, even that is that internal patriarchy where it's like, don't rest, because if you're resting, you're not doing the things that you're supposed to be doing. And yeah. that's what yeah. really, like, undoing that is yeah. is not an easy feat.
No, it's really not.
Yeah. Is that what you help women do, is undoing that piece and finding?
Yeah, I think it's all of the conditioning. So it's almost an unbecoming, and because we became all these things. And then a lot of times when I started my coaching career, I thought I was going to help people in general, not just women, to people who were in, especially in professions like medicine and law and or CEOs and whatever, people who were in these coveted positions, but who really wanted to, I don't know, be artists or whatever, or not necessarily have all that stuff, yeah. but to who were not satisfied.
Yeah.
And what I noticed was that when I started working with people, first of all, that I always work with women because I was a breast cancer surgeon. So I was like, no, I really like working with women more. So that was a quick change. And then I started noticing that doesn't matter what the thing was, there was everything was about that internal patriarchy. We were basically people pleasing so much and having to do, and not only just people pleasing, but what I started calling society pleasing,
yeah,
which is like, let me fit into this box that I have to be in. And because if we get out of the box, people are going to think thoughts, and I don't know what's going to happen if they think those thoughts. Yeah. And the truth is that people think thoughts anyway. You can do whatever. You can be perfect, which is impossible, but you can be the perfect wife, the Pinterest mom, the super career woman, and do all the things. People are going to judge you. Doesn't matter. Yeah. Does not matter. You're going to be judged either yeah. way, no matter what you do, no matter if you're tall, if you're short, if you're fat, if you're skinny, if you eat too much, if you don't eat at all, if you exercise, if you don't, like, people are going to judge you.
Yeah.
So why are we trying to put ourselves into these positions when it's like, well, they're going to think things. So better please myself, because I can't please every single person. So yeah.
that's amazing and yeah. so powerful. And so when you're working with women, because I think there's this piece of like, we don't even realize that it's the internal pain. So like that's a problem unaware area, you yeah. know? So when you have women come to you to work on this stuff, what are they saying is the problem? What are they say? What are the challenges you're hearing? Like, what are they feeling and experiencing and thinking it is that likely is, you know, like kind of like the symptom of the root issue?
Yeah, there's a lot. One thing that I hear a lot is like, oh, I'm so stuck. And sometimes it's stuck in a relationship. Sometimes it's stuck at work. Sometimes it's stuck in whatever. It's just, I'm stuck. What I think is you're stuck in an identity. Mm-hmm. Like I was stuck in that identity. Like, oh, if you take this away, what am I? Who am I? Mm-hmm. But a lot of times is, and with, I would see that with my patients too, not just with my clients, but people who would be like, well, you know, my partner, for example, or my boss, my boss asked me to give me extra work. And I mean, I have to say, of course I have to do these things and I'm super tired. And, or, you know, my partner is always, I don't know, usually he, right? Let's be honest. It's usually the male, a male partner. It's like, well, yeah, he works and he has this very busy job, whatever. So I also have a job, but I take care of the kids because somehow that's my job.
Yeah.
And
along with all the other emotional labor of life is also
your. Oh my God. 100%. So that is so much what, or just like, I'm just so exhausted and I know this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. And I just really just dislike I'm just not fulfilled and I don't have a purpose and all those things are like, you don't even necessarily need to have a purpose in life. I don't believe that you have like, oh, you were born and then here's your, you know, here's a secret message that you're going to spend all your whole life trying to figure out. I don't even think that's true. But the fact that you don't have something that fulfills you in some way, because as much as motherhood is amazing and great and all that, it's just not, for a lot of people, it's not what you want to do for yeah. 24 hours, 7 days a week.
Absolutely. And we've been told we're supposed to want that.
And we're supposed to love that. Yeah. And just, you know, and a lot of times I know that sometimes I would say, especially for people without kids, when I complain of any, or just say, oh my gosh, I'm so tired or whatever. Like today when my, when the call from school saying that my kids have lice, I'm like, well, now I have to like do all this thing that I was not planning, and I have to, cancel calls and stuff because I have to get them early to treat them and all that stuff. It's just like, I think if I was still married to a man, as much as I would be the person who would do that always, because I would be, because I would say, well, obviously this is my job. Or obviously he's not going to do it as well as I am, which may or may not be true. I don't know. But the truth is that we take on these things a lot, and then we get so tired. And I think a lot of my clients come to me with that kind of, I'm just, you're resenting that person or that job or your kids or whomever, because you're not setting up boundaries, because you're not saying no. Because one thing that happened to me a lot was I was just like, one of my then husband's job was to do the dishwasher stuff. Mm-hmm. And I swear to God, I don't know. I think he did it on purpose. I was like, how can you even stack things in this way? I don't even understand what's going on here. But like, I'm not going to fix it. Like if it's not washed, we just run it again. It's fine tomorrow. I mean, you know, like the, instead of being like, well, you can't do it right, so I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
No, don't do that.
Yeah.
You have to let go of control. You have to let go of, I'm the only person who can fold this thing, or at work, I'm the only person who can, you know, do this thing, and just learn to, first of all, trust yourself enough to have people around you who will do things right.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, something that we don't really do,
yeah,
be it at work or with our partners, mm-hmm, and just trust people to do what they do, and to trust you to know how to deal with whatever doesn't go perfectly well.
Yeah.
So all that need for perfection, that need for like, no, I have to do all the things and all that, that does create resentment. And I think that is the poison part. And that is a lot of times when people come to me, it was just like, I just don't know. I'm supposed to be happy because I have all these things and I hate everything and my life is, or I'm stuck and I don't know where to go now. I know I'm supposed to do other things. And sometimes it's because kids left the house because, or you retired or something like that. And I'm like, well, now what?
Yeah. Those are the two areas specifically. I'm stuck, or I'm supposed to be happy and I'm not. Like, I'm missing that fulfillment piece. And just a little follow-up question there, because I always find this so interesting for you and maybe your clients, when they're stuck long enough, or when you, do you start to experience that show up physically in some way in your body? Like, have you?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I have a theory that is very much not 100% scientifically proven. So do not, but I do think my theory is that autoimmune diseases have a way bigger mental component than we think right now in medicine. And we're trying to give all these drugs instead of like, go do therapy, go do coaching, go figure out your life, like stop saying yes to everything you want to say no to. Like, really stand up for yourself, or quit the stupid job that you hate. And I don't know, let your kids, I was at the playground this weekend and I'm seeing this mom, like every little thing that the kid would say, the mom would just go and like, oh no, I can help you. And whatever. My kids are like, I don't know where they are in the playground. I'm just like, you know. And I'm like, I get it. I grew up like that and I'm in one piece. So like, I'm sure they might get hurt. I mean, I haven't had stitches 3 times by their age. So I think I'm fine. They never did that. So I think like, yeah, let them fix their own problems, you know, instead of you having, oh, I'm bored. And oh, let me like do all the things for you. Well, just, I don't know, go dig a hole outside. I don't, okay, be bored. That's not my problem. Go
do something. Being bored's okay.
It's fine, right? Yeah. So I think we give so much to other people in that way.
Then
our bodies are trying to be like, we're literally saying that we're against this thing in your own body. I don't know. I feel like that specifically, and also mysterious symptoms, you know, your hair is falling off, or you have some gut issues and you go to the doctor and they say everything is perfectly fine. There's no problem.
Yeah.
And a lot of times also serious diseases like everything from high blood pressure to cancer to diabetes to all that stuff. I'm not saying that you will be 100% cured if you go find a therapist or a coach, but I have seen it time and time again. I had clients with ADHD. I just got a message from a client today who has ADHD, and she was like, I thought I would, that was my life, that I was just gonna feel like that my whole life. And it's not the ADHD, it's a bunch of other things that you put on top of it.
No, I completely agree with you. It's, I think that there is a, I mean, look, we're not, our brains and bodies are not separate. They're together. No. They're a part of this. So they work like cohesively at all times. And I think, you know, I always say to women in perimenopause, like we, this story we've been told is like, oh, it's my hormones. It's not your main sex hormone. Like, yes, they're imbalanced, but they don't just go there on their own. Like, it's not like magically, you know, most of the time it's what's imbalancing them, what's keeping them from being produced. And a lot of that has to do with like our stress and non-stress response.
Right.
And when we're breaking down faster than we're building because our head's in the way, I mean, inevitably you always slide into dysfunction, disease, chronic or otherwise. And it's just, so it's always interesting to hear it show up in other areas. So women come to you at that point, this is what they're saying, I'm stuck, or I should be fulfilled, I'm not fulfilled, I don't know how to get fulfilled. And for you, I mean, we've already talked a little bit about this, but like, why do you feel like these things are specifically happening? Because of that internal patriarchy?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, in our society, as much as things are much better, obviously, today than they were even 10, 20 years ago, or 30 for sure, and all that, it's been such a short period of time that we had as women more freedom to do things. We couldn't have a credit card. We couldn't open a business until 5 minutes ago. I don't know, the 80s. That's crazy. That was 5 minutes ago in evolutionary terms.
Wow, I didn't even think. I know my mom always often talks about like when my parents split, how nobody would give her a mortgage, and she has like
you can't. So it was just the 50th anniversary, I think, of, I don't know now if it was opening a business or having a credit card, one of these two things, that women needed a man to sign up to co-sign for her to be able to do any of these things. So, and literally everything in society, for example, one thing that I was looking at the other day, because there's a lot, obviously we have all the money mindset issues because you're women and you're not supposed to be dealing with that. If you look at the financial advice that you can see in men's magazines, they're going to say, hey, invest in real estate. I don't know, buy a crypto, go get your money and go make more of it. And in women's magazines, it's like cut coupons, don't save up, don't drink your latte, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, because you're silly. You don't know how to invest. You just have to save.
I didn't realize that until you just spelled that out for me. And that is so flipping true.
Yeah. It's so this, you can look at any corner of life, because patriarchy 101 is, I think it was like a bunch of white dudes one day that started looking at women, be like, these creatures, they have like this weird thing with nature. They know things. They have these, they know things they're not supposed to know. They feel like a little bit power. Let's just like cut that shit off real quick. Cause if not, they're literally
gonna burn them.
they're gonna rule the world, which we totally would. And we will eventually. But I think a bunch of really smart white men noticed that women were, if you just let them be, they will be too powerful. And then you started like, well, I think you're a little bit crazy, or you shouldn't trust yourself. So patriarchy 101 for me is, let's make them not trust themselves. Because if you trust yourself, if you have confidence, there's nothing you cannot do. That's why these bros are doing, you know, going to Mars or whatever. Why do you want to go to Mars? Go, I don't know, explore the ocean, go explore the inside of your brain. Maybe, I don't know. Right. Like, instead, like they have this amazing confidence, which we see all the time in men, but when women show any sort of confidence or any sort of, let me get a little bit off the track, first of all, we were burned at the stake, or you told you're crazy and put in an asylum, which is insane if you look at the history of how women were put in asylums just for going against something that they were like, this is bullshit and I don't want to do it. And so trauma is inherited. That has been proven. So we still have that.
Epigenetics, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Totally, in our DNA. So that oppression is carried on us. Like, well, obviously, if I trust myself too much, or if I start having too many ideas, or if I grow too much, or if I'm successful, first of all, you're a bitch, number one. Yeah. You can't be assertive and direct without being called. And now there's the Karen, there's a whatever, you know, there's all these things.
Yeah, I hate that. It's let's put, and even in like such a, you know, I run into some, like being in the health and wellness industry, it's like, we're constantly told to try to be smaller, take up less, take up less space. And any way I can, suck it in with Spanx, like put on angles in makeup, like
for sure.
You can lose weight, any way you can, take up less space. And then we just disappear. Because to take up less space means we have to be quieter in a way, as opposed to take up more space. And so we,
and we apologize for one thing that I cannot stop noticing is how much sorry we say. For example, and you're going to see this now all the time, when you're on a Zoom call with men and women, whenever there's a question to be asked, I bet you that at least 70% of women will will unmute themselves, say, oh, sorry, I just have a quick question. Men never do that. They just like, I have a question. That's why you're in the call, because you have questions, right? Most of the time. And I was on a plane recently, and this little girl, she probably was like four-ish, and she was in the middle seat, and her mom was next to her, and she was doing whatever on her iPad. She was playing a little game on her iPad. And at some point she goes, oh my gosh, I'm so good at this, mommy. Look, I did blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, so-and-so, don't do that. You need to be humble. And I swear to God, my head just like flipped. It was like, no. Oh. And I was just like, okay, I'm not going to say anything, but I had tears in my eyes. I'm like, see, this is why.
Yeah.
Like, why would you be humble? Why would you be humble? Because we're telling, boys are not told to be, you know, if they say, hey, look at how good I am at lacrosse or whatever the hell is that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh, you're amazing. Or even if you go and do horrible things to women and you should be in prison for a long time, it's like, wow, but we can't, because then it's his future is going to be, you know, he's so good at swimming or whatever. What in the world?
It is crawling.
So all these things, that's why it doesn't matter if you're a badass CEO or if you, whatever. I was a surgeon, a firefighter, all these things. And I still was very, this is not, oh, this is why I think this. This is my belief that I thought about and then that I decided that I believe this. No, this is the beliefs that just slowly
given
to us and all the things. For example, when Trump was the first time he ran for president, it was him or Hillary. And people were like, there's a woman. I mean, she's a bitch. She's a whatever. Even the people who, you know, with the part, it was like, well, if the option is a woman, maybe let's take this guy. Which I think if it was anyone else, honestly, I think that might not have happened. Yeah. Because running against women in these positions, well, I don't know, you know, you're a woman, so maybe you hear there's so much.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a shocking reality to.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've covered a lot of things, and I mean, I can probably talk forever about this and go down many rabbit holes.
Seriously.
But okay. So we have women here, like they, you know, there's maybe whoever's listening is starting to recognize that they have beliefs that maybe aren't their own beliefs. And that they want something else. So what do they begin to do, Manuela? What do we do first? Can you give them some steps? And me too. I need these steps.
I think the first thing is kind of, if you want to sit in your car and drive from New York to Texas, you need to know where you are to plug it into the GPS so that you have a way. So first of all, is to be like, okay, where am I? And let me examine what are the things that I actually believe. And for me, it was the Hawaii part. I went to Hawaii and I was like completely plugged out of everything. And I realized that not everybody can do that.
No, but that's why you hire a coach when you can't.
But I think that's the exactly.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard to, it's almost like in my mind is like, if you want to get tidy up your closet, but you're inside the closet with the clothes, you know, it's like, no, let's take the clothes out of the closet and look at them. And as your thoughts, right? And let's look at these thoughts. Okay, this thought. No, I like this thought. I'm going to keep this thought. For example, I love when men are chivalrous. I love a man that will open the door for me. I think that does not do anything for my, you know, I'm still a powerful powerful woman if someone pulls the chair up for me, or, you know, when my boyfriend carries my heavy bag up the stairs. Yeah, yeah. Do it. You're physically more capable of doing this. And I'm totally fine with that. So that is something that I can keep. I don't need to be like, oh, don't, why do you think, why are you doing that? I can do it myself. Yeah, I know I can do it myself. I just don't want to.
Yeah.
Go do it.
So for you, you're like, there's nothing deeper behind that. It's purely just because it's logical, yes, and makes sense and it's helpful.
Right.
So
especially with the physical stuff, right? Yeah. He came to my house and he's like, he tilled my front yard. I would never do that. I'm like, I do not want to do that. My back's going to hurt. I'm just not. And he's like, no, we'll do it. So he, you know, you want to do that. Great. So that belief is something that I can keep. You know, I can have that as a thing there. And at the same time, maybe, I don't know, if we're in a restaurant and my dish is not what I ordered, I don't need him to go and, hey, this poor woman, this damsel in distress here, doesn't have the food she wants. I can go into, or I can step up for myself. I can defend myself in most situations. Obviously, if someone comes to me with a gun or a knife, maybe not. But in most situations, I can do that, and I can stand up for myself. I don't need someone to be here and protecting me. I love that they want to do that, but like a lot of times, like, okay, I can do that myself. So it's just really being like, okay, what things do you want to keep? What things do you want to throw away?
Yeah.
So I think that is the first thing that I usually do with the clients. Like, let's just kind of figure out where you are. And for a lot of clients who are really deep in the hole of like, everything sucks and my life is horrible and I'm stuck, the first thing is just to be okay with that. And I had a coach who said, when you're in a hole, the first thing you need to do is to be okay with the fact that you're in a hole. Doesn't matter if you were pushed in a hole. Doesn't matter if you weren't looking and you fell in the hole. Doesn't matter if the earth, you know, gobbled you up and now you're just in a hole. Okay, fine. We're here. Now what?
Now how do we get out? Yeah.
Instead of like, oh, but I already did all these things and I shouldn't be here because life is so unfair and whatever. It's like, cool. All that, but also that doesn't help you.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, I think that goes the same for our physical health. It's like, okay, this is where we are. This is just where we are.
Yes.
And you've tried things and they haven't worked in this, but like now we need to figure out how do we get out of the hole?
Yeah. And even if it's something I have a client currently, and I had clients in the past who were very, it was really hard to get over the fact that you have some physical ailment, some disease or some horrible thing happened. Like one was the husband who, when they divorced, the husband took all her money. So now she has no money. Mm. Yes. Be super angry about that. Go to a rage room and break shit with a baseball bat. Absolutely. Yeah. Like work on that and absolutely be angry. But also know that you stay in that, stuck in that pitiful story or victim-y. Mm-hmm. It's like it's not gonna, and your friends and maybe your people in your life are going to want to be like, oh, poor you and all that, and that might be good for a minute, but if you live there for a long time, you're not gonna get out of it, because that is also very addictive to be like, oh, now I'm the victim and everybody's giving me all this attention, instead of no, I have the power to get out of it. Yeah, that wasn't fair and that is not cool. What am I going to do to get out of it? Because nobody's going to come to save you. You're going to have to do it yourself.
Yeah.
And that is the part for a lot of, and I think for a lot of people, even to start coaching, it can be the moment where I have given money back to clients and be like, you're just not ready, because they want to be stuck in that story of like, but poor me, this horrible thing has happened. Like, I get it. And that's horrible. And let's grieve it. Let's feel all those feelings, but at some point we're going to have to move on from them if you want to actually change your life. The same thing.
Hold on to the past and still ride off into the future. Like, you got to put those bags down. You got to put the bags down.
Yeah.
That's good.
Okay. And that is a part that is hard, because you have to feel the feelings. And most people do not know how to feel their feelings. You just numb your feelings instead of, let me be real, especially anger.
Yeah.
With women, if it's something that you want to be, if it's a person did something to you or something really unfair happened, it's so hard for women to just be freaking angry. And right. And then, because when you're angry and you go and you break a bunch of stuff or whatever, you really push your anger or you primal scream or whatever, that moves the, okay, you felt it. Now you can start really like feeling something else, because if not, that thing is going to be there on the surface and it's going to show up in your health and on those kinds of things.
Yeah. You can't just bubble wrap it and stick it somewhere. Trust me. I did it for years. It doesn't.
No.
It will come out and leak out one way or another. So
it will, for sure. Yeah. I like a comedian. She was saying one day, it was like, you know, like you just stuff all your trauma and your stuff right there. And then one day you stub your toe and then everything just comes, like everything was stored in that toe. And now it's just like, bleh, like it's going to be somewhere. I remember one day I had a massage and I don't know what they did in that massage. They're like,
yeah,
release some. And I was just like, I don't even know why I'm crying, but like something happened and now I have to let this out. So that not knowing how to feel your feelings, I think for most people, if you just do that, your life is going to change dramatically. You don't need to do anything else. Yeah.
Okay. So we need to admit where we are. We need to know, like feel our feelings and actually get them out, rupture them in some way or another. And then we need to start examining our thoughts.
Yeah. And I think a lot of together with the examining your thoughts is also things you like and things you want to do or not. For example, if it's change of career or things like that, I think a lot of times people tend to think very logically.
Yeah.
And it's, let me do a pros and cons and all that. Instead of like, can you just close your eyes and imagine? I do that a lot with clients. Like, just imagine how you want to feel when you have your new career. And they're like, what does that even mean? Like, I don't know. How do you want your days to be? Because that's how I chose. I was like, I want location freedom and time freedom. I don't want to be stuck to a place or to people telling me I have to be this. So like, that is the first thing. I want to take my kids to school. If they're sick, I want to be home, et cetera. So that's how I want to feel. I want to feel like I own these two things and that the people that I work with will understand if I have to cancel or reschedule because I have children. You know, and a lot of times like, well, here's how the things that I can do, these are my skills and here's the money I want to make and all that. And when you go about, yes, do that stuff, but also look at these other parts.
Yeah.
Of really, how much do you want to work and how, you know, how do you want it to look? Do you want to interact with people? Do you not want to, all those seemingly small things.
Yeah.
But they're not, because that what makes your day, right? If you, I know a lot of doctors who hate people and they become, I don't know, radiologists or pathologists. They don't have to interact with patients. You know, it's like, that is great. That is exactly what you should do if you don't want to. But like, why would you be, I don't know, a hostess at a restaurant if you hate small talk? Don't go do that, right? So just knowing those things about yourself that a lot of times you don't even know because you just know the things that you're like, oh, I'm bad at math and I'm good at, I don't know, debating and blah, blah, because you've been hearing this stuff since forever. And then you're like, but you want to do that? Do you like debating?
No, it's a very real thing. Like I think, and we make these things a part of our identity, just same way you were talking about like separating your identity from being a surgeon, like I have a very clear memory of like having to, like my whole life, people have been like, you're so nice. And so my identity was like, and then I felt like I couldn't not be nice. And I mean, you go through life only being nice. I mean, that shit leaks out places. I will tell you, like, you need to get it somewhere. You need to get that out some places. And it's like to now in life examine where I'm like, maybe I don't have to wave to that total stranger as I'm walking down the street. Like, I just don't feel like it today and I don't have to. And it's not offending anybody. Like it doesn't even, you know, it's like, I'm allowed to just not be extra nice today. And it's these small things that you're saying, and they really add up. And we do need to examine whether they're true for us or not. So
That good girl complex or good girl, like you're the good girl and you need to keep being the good girl. That's who you are. That is super common. And I have one of the talks that I give is called Being Nice is Slowly Killing You. Because I think there's a difference between nice and kind. Yes, please be kind always, always, always. But nice is different. Yeah. Nice is when you're doing something because you can't, you know, like, let me be polite. I can't say no to. You're supposed to. I have to, because if I say no, I don't know, like people say that a lot. I had a friend saying the other day, she's like, oh, I got sucked into this volunteer for whatever at school. Oh, I got guilt tripped into doing this thing. And I was like, you know what? Like you can only be guilt tripped into doing something if you actually feel guilty about not doing it. Because I'm not guilty. I don't feel guilty for not being the PTA and not volunteering at school and not showing up. I don't do any of these things. And I do not like doing these things. And I'm not going to do them.
Yeah.
And you can cry a river in front of me and say that the school is literally going to, I don't know, fall down without my help. I was like, that's not what I'm doing. Yeah. I don't like doing that. And there's people who like doing that. So we'll look for those people, not me.
There are people.
So it's like, when you want to be nice and you want to do, let me do this because it's the PTA, it's the school, it's whatever. It's like, no, like I show up for every single event that exists and my kids will need my presence. I always go.
Yeah.
But I don't want to do the other things. I don't want to do a massive birthday parties for my kids with all the Pinterest stuff. I'm just not, that doesn't delight me. Yeah. I'd rather take them to go do something fun, whatever. I don't know. But knowing these things about yourself and being like, okay, I'm not
okay with
you. You can be a kind person.
Yeah.
And you can say to people, no. Actually, research shows that Brené Brown talks about that, how the most compassionate people, the one trait that they have in common, just one, is that they have really good boundaries. Right, because you can't be compassionate to every single person in the world. Yeah. It's impossible, because then you're not going to be compassionate to yourself, and that's not helping anyone.
Oh, this stuff is so good. I love it. And I think, you know, I think it's so important to say, you know, as we wrap up here, like, it doesn't happen overnight, right? Like, no. It's a practice, right? To like the undoing. Is that what you called it? The undoing? Was that your term?
Unbecoming was
unbecoming.
A term that I
the unbecoming. Is it doesn't we didn't get here overnight, so it's not going to take overnight to unbecome some of these things.
This is really hard. I have a lot of patients and a lot of clients who get frustrated about that. It's like, oh, it's not working. I'm like, girl, listen, you've been doing this for, I don't know, five decades, and now we had four sessions and you want this to be done. It's not going to be done that way. And it's work for sure.
Yeah. And that I think is another message we get from the world, right? Is like things should happen quickly, but almost always in all of my clients, we hit week 6 or 7 or 8 and they're like, I feel better. And for me, it's like, I'm not losing weight. I'm like, it's coming. Like you have to still be here doing the right things. Like the tree, if the tree falls in the wood, it still makes the sound. Like you're doing the things. And it takes time.
Yeah. And the best example is going to the gym. You can know how a treadmill works. You can look at the treadmill. You can have a treadmill. If you don't go and walk on the thing, nothing's going to happen. And it's not going to be, well, I went to the gym today. Where's my six pack? What's going on?
No.
Right? It's funny how we accept that if you stop going to the gym, you're going to lose your six pack. Yeah. So it's the same thing. If you're not in the practice of being like, oh yes, I have this default thing of, I don't know, complaining or being victim, but kind of like, oh, I can stop it. And I can learn to be like, oh, I'm doing the thing that I used to do. Okay, let me stop and go back. Like, you're always going to have to do that for some things in your life. They're not going to go away. And you're always going to have to police yourself and be like, oh, wait, I'm doing the thing. I'm behaving that way that I don't like. That gives me results that I'm not happy with.
Yeah. And I think one thing you show us so well is that it's worth it.
Oh God. Yeah. So worth it. Oh my gosh. It's worth it. It's so worth it. It's like losing weight, getting healthy, all this stuff. It's so worth it when you get there. It's like, it's a lot of work and pizza is delicious. I haven't eaten pizza in 5 years, except for the cauliflower ones. It's whatever. But you know, it's like,
yes, it's putting down.
But there is a trade-off. There is a price for sure. There is a price. And the price a lot of times is relationships. A lot of time there are people in your life that you're going to have to change the relationship with, because those people are not going to like the fact that you're going to have boundaries, that you're going to say what you want and that you're going to do things differently.
Yeah.
But for a lot of my clients, what happens is partners and family members, et cetera, that had a hard relationship with, a lot of times what happens is that they see how happy you are. And I was like, wait, maybe there's something there that I could learn.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think at the end of the day, then it's best to be the example, be the model, not the martyr, right?
Yeah.
Like it's like just model what you're doing and choose to do for you and not for, because that's the definition of codependency, isn't it? It's like sacrificing your happiness for someone else's happiness in hopes that it'll eventually make you happy. So if you stop doing that piece, then, you know, people are going to be uncomfortable for a bit and that might make you uncomfortable, but you'll be happy.
Yeah. It's so wonderful. When the other day I had an example of this, which was to just allow people to have their big feelings and deal with them without me having to fix their feelings.
Yeah.
Like I didn't do anything wrong. If you're feeling this big feeling about this thing that I did, You can go talk to your therapist, your friends, your mom. I don't know, but it's not my problem. I do not have to, which is something we do a lot as women, especially with our partners. Yeah. Like, let me go. Something happened. I did something. I said something or stood up for myself and now they're mad. And now I have to go and like, oh, but you're mad. Let me be super nice. No, they can deal with that. Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah. Oh, this has been incredible. And as I said, I could talk to you forever. Thank you so much. How does anyone who's listening who wants to see more about this permission you give people to embody themselves, if they want to learn more from you on this, if they want to do some of this work, how do they find you?
Well, I'm in all the social media as Dr. Dr. Manuela Powell. That is the best way to find me. And also my website, manuelapowell.com. And please come connect with me, DM me. I would love to hear from you.
Yeah, go enjoy her reels. They're fully entertaining and educational and, you know, permissible. I feel like they just give you that permission to be inspired. So thank you so much for being here, Dr. Manuela. I really appreciate it. And sisters, go out, put down the emotional baggage, recognize where you are, be more in your life and not just less on a scale. And we'll catch you next time.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Period Whisperer podcast. If you liked this episode, take 30 seconds right now to write a review on iTunes and then reach out to me directly on Instagram at Bria_period_whisperer and message me there with a screenshot of your review. As a thank you, I will give you a customized free hormone audit to get you on your way to the best health of your life in midlife.